Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, good morning. Tom Hayes here in Beantown, Massachusetts, Boston, USA. And what a great, fantastic day. Beautiful. What do we got, the 18th or something? And it's freezing on the water, but nonetheless. But anyway, we got a great show about the Sugar Shack today. Some crazy things have happened within the last hour that got me all excited. But let me introduce my good time buddy, Ralph Pease, who put this show together. Ralphie, you there?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you want to tell everybody our little crazy history, or should I?
No, I don't think it's any of their business.
You just met Ralph Pease. Okay, so forget that then. We won't tell them anything about ourselves, but we will tell them about... We did share a parallel life all our lives. Part of that parallel life was the Sugar Shack.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And so we were there on the same nights for years, never connected, and didn't connect until we were both in later years. None of their business when we connected. And since then, we've been great friends, but we had a numerous... parallel life connections, very interesting connections when you think about it. And but we really connected when we did meet up and we started talking about the Sugar Shack, and which was weird because, you know, if I were to play this movie, I was with Ray, who we both know, going along the beach there out of Chappaquiddick. And I started telling him, geez, I said, you know, I wish I had gone to Martha's Vineyard earlier in my life because I would have taken my kids there. And he says, why didn't you? I says, my ex-wife really didn't like to go anywhere, do anything. He says, what'd you marry her for? I said, I'll tell you why I married her. I says, we dated for 3 or 4 years at the Sugar Shack. So I says, every Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, we would hang out listening to the OJs and the Stylistics and the Delphonics. I says, you tell me how you can expose yourself to that music with a woman and not fall in love. So he says, I don't even understand anything about the Sugar Shack. And not even 10 minutes later, bam, I meet you and another guy who were Sugar Shack aficionados, and we shared all these great stories about the Sugar Shack. So that's the backdrop to this. So do you want us to, why don't you give us a little input as to your take on the Sugar Shack and what, you know, your experiences and what we kind of want to hope to do today. Hopefully you got a buddy calling in who remembers a lot about those days and got some backstories.
Yes, I hope he does call in because he's more
We can talk about some of our stuff. So what's your, do you have a, I have a distinct first impression of the Sugar Shack. What about you?
Well, let me say this, that as far as the parallel lives aspect, I mean, during that time there was the jazz clubs, which was
Paul's Mall.
The street, Paul's Mall, and which is kind of mixed,
Regatta Bar.
Not the Regatta Bar, but the
Paul's
next
workshop.
Paul.
There was. Go ahead.
It was a jazz shop. It was a jazz workshop.
Oh yeah.
So you had to be in there in time when I was in there, and didn't go into that much until Miles Davis showed up there. And and then, of course, there was the Regatta Bar and Scholars. So I know that Regatta Bar, I remember identifying you there, but didn't realize, you know, who you were.
And that we were going to, our paths would cross at some crazy point.
Right.
So here we are talking about the film. Well, I remember, I'll get specific about my memory. So the first time, that's right, one of my buddies had told me about the shack, and I was still in college, and we were said about the Hot Nuts. He was talking about some group, the Hot Nuts, that he had heard one of their albums. Very funny, very, how can you say, very dirty lyrics. And they were hysterically funny and hysterically musically talented. And so we went down to see them, and I was just fascinated by the club itself. And I think that, you know, and just, you know, they had all of these crazy limericks and everything else. It was a great night, and I said, geez, I got to go back there. So I think the second night we were there was to see the, it was a blue-eyed soul group from the South, Magnificent Men.
Magnificent Men.
Do you remember them?
Yes, I do. But I never saw them, but I remember the advertisements that they had on the poster board at the building there.
Yeah. And so we went down to see that, and I was absolutely, you know, it was, those were fascinating times, the 60s, because there was so much going on with, you know, strides. You know, Martin Luther King was making huge strides with the movement and everything else. So everything was changing. I mean, it was just those turbulent times. And to see these, I think there were seven guys or something. They not only they played as a band, but they also sang. As I think all the musicians were singers as well, so they didn't have what normally would be in a rhythm and blues and soul group, you know, with four front men or three front men and the band in behind. And I remember just the crowd going crazy, which was a predominantly black crowd, and they were freaking out at the blue-eyed soul of these guys. They just had amazing harmonies.
Yeah, well, and, you know, folks had great appreciation of music.
Yeah, absolutely. So fast forward, I went to graduate school at University of Connecticut and met this guy on my floor, Pittsburgh Ed, we called him, who bragged all the time about the great soul scene, soul music scene in Pittsburgh. And one day I had enough, and I said to him, well, I said, we got this club in Boston. I said, and he says, yeah, well, you know, what are you talking about? I said, no, I said, this club is absolutely amazing. And I started naming some of the groups. He says, it was a Thursday night, you know, and the week was winding down. He says, well, call them up, see who's there, if they're so good. So we're in Storrs, Connecticut, and so I call up, and I said, yeah, I just want to know who's playing tonight. And he said, yeah, Curtis Mayfield and the Impressions.
Yeah, yeah, see.
Did you get to see them?
No, I never saw Curtis Mayfield there. But who I did see often was the Delphonics, the Stylistics, Melvin. And that's with Kenny Pendergrass.
Yeah, was with them. Was with Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes.
Yeah, part of Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes. And I used to see a guy riding around Roxbury, you know. He had this, like, kind of like an orange Cadillac, and I used to see him riding through Dudley often, you know, not on the road and headed, but, you know, he knew the neighborhood. He knew the neighborhood.
It was, and that was Teddy?
Teddy.
Teddy would drive through Roxbury. Wow.
On a mission. He was on a mission, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I remember I put the phone down, and I said, Curtis Mayfield and the Impressions. He goes, get in the car. We're going. And, of course, in those days, everybody dressed up.
Right.
So we put suit coats and ties on, and we got in the car. I mean, nothing like today. And I remember going down the stairs, you know, as I go down the stairs one at a time, and walked through the door, and it was a scene out of a Shaft movie set. I mean, it was just spectacular. Of course, the first thing, remember what, why don't you explain to the audience what you'd see on Boylston Street lined up in front before you'd go actually into the club. You remember?
Let's see. Well, I remember it. Of course, that area was kind of like the red light district because the whole downtown.
Yeah, that's
area.
All right. Boston hadn't evolved to what it is today. It was the combat zone.
Combat Zone, exactly. And they had all kinds of people down there. It was quite a mix of people. And so
it was what you would call seedy. First of all, just to go there, you had to be intrepid just to go there. You had to be courageous just to go into that area.
Right, exactly. And it was one of those areas that, you know, you kind of didn't want to be there, but then you knew you went there because things were happening. And, of course, the Sugar Shack was in that old industrial building there. Not quite an industrial building, but it was a, you know, office building, which,
yep,
you know, one of those miraculous things that they have something in there. And it was also the theater area, so it was like in a kind of like one of those theater type locations, right in that section of the downtown. And of course, all the hustlers used to be down there.
Oh yeah.
Many of them I knew, and I used to see them when I would go down there. And I would see them there. They'd be there, sitting around, hanging around, and doing whatever they were doing, and. The most amazing thing about that place was that it didn't seem like much happened. It was just fun. It was just fun.
On the edge. It was over the edge. It was, like you said, I mean, we don't have to be, this is an adult show, we don't have to pull any punches. There was just pimps and hookers everywhere in the pimp mobiles. Right? Remember all the Cadillacs with the television antennas?
That was their office. I mean, that was their office. They all showed up because
you're right.
You know, there was one fella that used to come in a white old style Bentley or something, or a Rolls,
yes,
or something.
Yes.
You know, so it was quite the area. It was quite the area. But I can honestly say that I never had any problems down there, and I don't remember anybody else having any problems down there. So
no, never.
Great. I mean, it was
never.
I thought.
Yeah,
I thought.
No matter what was going on in, you know, the world or America or on the streets in Boston, once you got in there, it was like the sanctuary. Everybody was there for the same reason, to be entertained and get along.
Exactly. It was unusual. I mean, the environment was great. Everybody was anticipating the groups. The groups were great. I mean,
the groups were phenomenal. Well, talk about that a little. I mean, we were blessed. We were seeing the groups on the way up.
Absolutely. Natalie Cole,
yep.
she was at UMass, and she started right there at I remember being at the first show and she had these two heavy ladies with her. If I remember correctly, I think she called them Two Tons of Fun or something. I might be wrong on that, but she had a name for them. But she put on a great show on that little one step up Diaz stage, and it was spectacular. And then there was the Boston group, the Nine Lords. I think that was
I remember the Nine Lords. Yeah.
They had the Temptations kind of.
They were slick. They had everything synchronized. Those guys.
One of the guys was my English teacher. One of the teachers at English High when I was there.
Well, you know, I just want to go back to that first memory, coming down and opening the door. You know, we went by all the pimp mobiles. I mean, all you have to do, people, if they want to know what we're talking about, is just watch that movie Shaft, and you'll understand those times. They were exciting times. And all those pimp mobiles. And so that set the scene. So they were all parked, double parked. Nobody bothered them. You know, and so that kind of set the scene. You knew something big was happening downstairs. And I remember opening the door, and there was, I'd just love to recreate this in a movie or something. It was just so spectacular. It was almost like, you know, you've seen Goodfellas.
Yes.
Yeah, and the scene, there's one scene where they're walking into the nightclub, and they do, and I didn't realize what this was until I recently took a video course. They do a one shot, and it starts on the street, you know, he gets out of the car, and they go downstairs. It's just like his first date with this gal. And they just walk through the back door, obviously, through the kitchen, all the way. They open up the curtains. They go down until they're seated, and it's just this amazing, spectacular shot. And that's what kind of happens. So you open the door, and there's Curtis Mayfield in those beautiful white suits they wore. And him in the impression saying, you know, keep on pushing. And the place is jammed to the rafters, people going crazy. And, you know, it was just a magical thing, you know?
Right. Yeah, the shack was all right. People would be packed in there, and you know what I mean. And it's not even like now where now all those guys and the stage is way and here you were right not more than 4 or 5 feet away from where they were putting on their show and pulling it out demonstrating what it was going to be like for the future. One of the key things I think about that place was that at that time, like all the civil rights stuff was going on, but the music was like one of those things that really made it. You forget about all the crap that was going on. It was a great. It was just a great location that just seemed to work for whatever the reason.
You're right. I mean, one of the things that happened was when James Brown came.
Yeah.
And, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I remember. Go ahead.
And, there was all kinds of tension in Boston because it was the busing problem.
Right.
And you know, and then James Brown walked in, and he just said, hey, listen, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on. Just as he did in Boston Garden when there was all kinds of problems, and Mayor White didn't know if he should run the show, but he did.
Right.
You know, and I got this. Yeah, I got this guy, Billy Porter, who was an actor, who said he tried to call in, but he couldn't get in somehow. I don't understand that. But he just gave me his cell number. Why don't we give him a call? Because they're doing a theatrical production. Maybe we can hear. I don't know if we're going to be, how well we're going to be able to hear, but I really want to give it a shot.
Also, call the other fellow that was supposed to participate with us. Give him
okay,
a call.
Okay, what's his number?
I don't have it in front of me because I expect
okay,
him to
Okay, then
call.
We're just going to have to, we're going to have to try Billy then. Let's try Billy. Let's see what we can do here. That's all right. Let's try Billy for a second and see. You know, while the iron is hot here, we can get at least make connection with the guy and put him on speaker, and maybe it'll come through. Okay, here, let's try this. Okay, I'm trying him now.
To see the play, that would work.
Yeah, oh my goodness. Well, you know, I've always wanted to do a movie about it, you know, dreamed about it, what an amazing movie it would be with a little backstory of, you know, being in the hood and doing all that stuff and just what it looked like, you know. It was just, let's see if we can get him here. Let me see. No, all of a sudden something's weird. We're not supposed to connect, I guess. Hang on, go ahead. You talk for a second about some of the stuff. You know, I got to message this guy back.
Okay.
So go ahead. Tell us some more stuff that you remember.
Well, the thing about the Sugar Shack was, it was one of those night venues after studying all night and all day, and you just head on down and hang out. It was just a great hangout.
Yeah.
You know, the one that we talked about, the cameraman, you remember the cameraman down there?
Sugar Shack Otis. Sugar Shack Otis.
One more. I got one more. One more. Almost 2 hours. I got the last one. one. Come on, take this last shot.
Yeah, it would be 7:30 at night, and it was the last one.
Let's get the last picture.
You know, that technique, I stole that technique recently. I started selling, you know, because I'm an entertainer. I made some CDs and I started selling them. And I find myself saying, here we go, here's Billy. Hang on. Billy. Billy.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Tom Hayes here. We're on the air. There's a weird connection. I don't understand why it's not going into the studio. But thanks for joining the show.
Yeah, I was trying to call in and it just kept saying the number is not activated. I was like, figured maybe you put it on something. Who knows about it? I couldn't get through either, but I got through on the cell. And, it's just been a work in progress. We're in the early stages right now for stage production. I'm actually good friends with Jerry Maffeo. I worked with him for years in the nightclub business before I went to Los Angeles, got into the film industry and the theater industry. And I interviewed Rudy Galino over the phone. He's living in Las Vegas, and I got the permission to do the stage production. I've performed at about 100 shows myself, and I'm figuring I come back to Boston, you know, what's my next move, what's my next project? And I decided, you know something? This is a great story. My dad used to hang in the Sugar Shack. He's from Charlestown back in the day. My aunt hung there. It was just it's a piece of Boston history, so I think it would be cool to tell the show and donate some money back to a nice charity, you know, maybe a Rudy's Choice. So, yeah.
Wow, you know, what's bizarre is this is my buddy Ralph Peace is on the air with me right now. Have you got like a radio or something going in the background there?
It's actually your show on.
Oh, okay, I got you.
So listening to the show, but you're coming and breaking up. We got a bad connection.
Yeah, all right. Well, listen, why don't we put together a show? And where we can get a connection, and then we'll dedicate it to you.
There you go.
All right. Oh, good.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, much better. Much better. Well, while we got you now, that's much better. We can actually hear you. You can hear us, okay?
Yeah, I got you.
Okay, great. Well, Ralph, let Billy know I actually have a guest on the show. Say something.
How you doing? I tried to come in.
Wait a minute. Okay, here, I got him. I got you now on speaker, Ralph. Go ahead.
Okay, how you doing?
Ralph, how are you, pal? I hear you're an old player from the old days of the Sugar Shack.
Yeah, no, I'm not an old player. Not quite that, but I used to go there.
That's wonderful. That's a great piece of Boston history, soul music history. It was one of the finest clubs around, and I'm actually in the process of interviewing the former owner, Rudy Galino. I already interviewed him on the phone, his partner, Jerry Maffeo, the management, and some of the old pimp players that were in town that hung out in the club. I have an interview with them next week, one of them anyways. So we're in the early stages of production, and we would like to get it up at the Strand Theater, hopefully, or maybe some of the small beers, maybe tell the story, and, you know, to connect to a charity or something like that of Rudy's Choice, because it's a cool story, you know. It's a place of Boston history. It's a true story. It should be told. And most of the iconic soul singers, like, you know, Powell, Funkadelic, George Clinton, Wilson Pickett, they all perform there. George Clinton still makes that clear to people when he's on stage here in Massachusetts. He'll tell the crowd straight up that I started my career at the Sugar Shack in Boston.
There and the other place up there by the Elliott, hotel. I can't remember the name of that place that the Paul and Funkadelic used to be at. But there were some great places in Boston.
I keep giving me a lot of the backstories of, you know, what went on in the office and what went on behind the scenes, and some of the stuff is just so funny and amazing, and it's just how they, you know, how the club closed, why it ended up closing, and so we'll see, man. I hope it, you know, I hope I can put it up. It's a Boston story, and we'll, you know, I'm going to do my best to make it happen. You know.
Wow, Billy, did you write the script?
What?
Did you write
I'm writing the scripts. I'm writing the story. I'm in the middle of it. I'm probably, I got just about done with the first draft. You know, we go to a lot of dialogue, and I'll bring in music impersonators. I'm trying to probably get like maybe a Teddy Pendergrass impersonator, maybe a Curtis Mayfield. Bring out three or four acts in between the story. It'll be a 2-hour show, and so we're in the club scene, and it'll give you one of the performers come from an actor that was an impersonator from a real performer back then. I did about 60 shows and a touring play called Chicago Club Rumble, and it was almost to that. It was about a corrupt cop out of Chicago, and then I toured Vegas a little bit, you know, in the small casinos and stuff. So, coming back to Boston, it was something that I really wanted to do. I don't know why, but it's a true story. It'd be cool to tell it, you know?
Well, if you're looking for a perspective from... You know, and you need some data. Ralph and I are around to talk to you sometime and give you the audience, the spectator's view.
That would be great. Yeah, maybe I think we can come in and we can set up a little meeting or something, and we can talk about what went on. And yeah, from the audience perspective, because that's the most important part. If it wasn't for the fans and the audience, they were a done club, and you know, Jerry looked out the window one day and said, "Oh my God, you're not going to believe this." He said, "There's 2,000 people wrapped around the corner all the way down Wilson Street." And before that, it was a struggling club. So it was one phone call to Motown Records, and they sent in a girl band on a New Year's Eve, and that was it. Sugar Shack was on from there, you know?
It was a scene.
And then that had a criminal element struck, you know, behind the scenes to get the Wendy Hill gang hung out in there. Well, there's some stories to be told. You know, it's just good stories.
Yeah, we will see
if I can call in, you know, in a 2-hour play. It's really, it's challenging, but I have an art director. I have a year-to-date people. I'm assembling a team right now, and hopefully we can get some financing, you know, because it does cost money to put these shows up. And, take it from there. And I'd definitely love to include you in the process and interview you and get your perspective on the audience. This is really, it's so weird, you know, how this is all coming together. I think it's meant to be.
Well, I'm in.
I think Rudy deserves that. You know?
Oh my God, he was such an icon, and I mean.
Everybody loves him. Everybody could. You know, the question he said. Rudy said to me on the phone. He said, "People always wondered during such a tensions times, there was racial tension in the city of Boston. How everybody from every culture could get together in one club, small club, and just have a good time with no problems." He said, "Nobody can understand how we did that. We just did it. People came to my club. There was no problems. Everybody wanted to dance, have a good time, and enjoy the music." And that's what he did. And he should be known for that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Luke Ralph.
He's a great guy. He's a wonderful guy. There's another gentleman out there named, he's doing a book on Rudy right now. And I got to speak to him a little bit also. So we get the real facts anyway. The story will, you know, it'll be the real deal.
Well, you know, again, there is something in the ether. Obviously pushing us to do this, because I've been talking about doing a movie about it for years. I've got so many other projects I got to get out of the way first. But it was, you know, to this day, and Ralph, I think, you know, get some input from you. By the way, if anybody's listening live, we're going to lose you in a few seconds, but then come back and listen to the podcast, because the podcast is a full 45 minutes. But Ralph, of all the places, and you and I have been to some pretty cool places in the world, Sugar Shack, without a doubt, was the most unique place I've ever been.
Yeah, it was great. And asked for a reasonable amount of money. You couldn't complain. But
the country that whole thing is wanted to come in. There was like one in New York and maybe one in San Francisco, but the Sugar Shack was in the top three for sure at that time. That I know.
Oh, without a doubt, it was the number one. It was I could say, and Booty would probably agree, and Ralph and I, that it was the number one club in the country. I mean, not even
right.
Detroit or, you know, like I said, I was telling one of the times I went was with a guy from Pittsburgh who thought they had a good soul scene down there, and he was absolutely blown away. When we opened the doors and saw Curtis Mayfield in a place packed like that, it was just a night I'll never forget, nor would anyone.
Yeah, they were good.
I wish I was around him.
Okay.
I got all the stories from my daddy. I get there quite often, and that was the spot. So, and it's just, an opportunity, and we'll see what happens. Hopefully we can make it happen.
Yeah, Ralph.
Maybe we can get that movie going. That sounds like a good idea.
Well, that's just, you know, turn this into, yeah, well, the backstory would be, you know, a young white guy in his 20s living in Roxbury, being exposed to this kind of stuff and, you know, his perspective. It kind of like not dissimilar from a Bronx Tale.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know.
Interesting, very interesting. Yeah, John, we can, you know, I can give my information and we can set up a time and sit down and talk about a little audience perspective and what your plans are and.
Yeah, and, well, I think even a couple of more radio calls to, you know, to get it moving along. You know, there's so much to say. Ralph, you had a couple of things. You had a couple of things you wanted to say. It's stuff to do with two phones working here. What were you just saying, Ralph, about the scene?
I had a question about whether or not they do any recording of those shows. Did the owners, did they record any of that stuff?
Yeah, they did. What Ralph is asking was, is there any video done? And there was. In fact, Channel 2, there's files. I know a couple of videographers here in the city who, and this is something that, Billy, you and I could go visit, where we could actually, and I don't know if you want to even incorporate it into the play itself, but there are actually is video footage of the acts at the Sugar Shack.
Oh wow, that would be great to have as a backdrop. That would be really great. You could start off the show and show a little bit about the realness of it, and then go into the story. Yes, that would help a lot. The archives, oh my God.
Well,
yes.
I know the guys who've got that stuff. So.
Well, that would be great. That would be great. Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, I mean, again, there's a million stories, and I would love to, you know. Get,
yeah. Well, just yeah. I got a date that works for you, and maybe I can meet you in town somewhere. I mean, I'm in Boston now for a little bit. Just come back from Los Angeles. I got a film out playing in Los Angeles called Miles Away. It's about Miles Davis, his son, his illegitimate son, actually. And, yeah, it's played in the cinema at the Langley Theater in San Diego. Now it's off to Houston and Vegas and hopefully to Boston. There's four Massachusetts guys. It's called Miles Away. You can order it online, miles.com, the movie.
Wow.
So.
Yes.
So we just finished that, yeah. And I got produced another one coming out called The Wristwatch. That's coming out in a couple of months, so sci-fi feature film, SAG-AFTRA. So I've been staying busy. God bless. I'm from Southie, you know. I spent some time in the military, got out of the army, opened the bar in Germany for 10 years, and then came back and did now what? I got into the entertainment business and just been on from there, just trying to have fun.
Well, I'm talking to you right now from Southie at the end of Broadway. I'm right at the corner of Broadway and Farragut here.
Oh, that's funny. I'm from Agent Fifth. I grew up in Old Harbor Projects and then up to Agent Fifth in the corner there. My whole family's from South Boston.
Well, we got a lot to talk about, so let's you and I set up another show, a follow-up show. We'll bring Ralph on that and some other people from those days, and we'll keep this going with an ongoing radio show, giving updates to people and really build up some promotion on this.
Yeah, I can call Rudy and have Rudy maybe come in on it with us one day.
Oh, that would be spectacular.
Yeah, I can call Rudy direct, and Jerry Maffeo, I can go meet Jerry in the North End. He was his sidekick, you know, and the stories are just amazing. But we don't want to give too much away.
No, we don't. But,
yeah.
All right, so we know how to connect with each other. We'll, this is...
You get my number, I'll give you my email, and then you communicate with me, and you let me know when it's a good time. I can come down to the studio and hang out with you. We can be for coffee, whatever you want to do.
Great. Fantastic. Thank you so much.
All right, John. Take care.
Okay.
Now.
Ralph, you stay on. All right. Thanks, Billy.
Take care, buddy.
All right.
Good
thank
talking
you.
With you.
All right. Thanks, man.
All right,
Well, Ralph, just another serendipitous event in our lives.
Take it as
pretty. That's
take
crazy.
It. Listen, let's call Gigi and see if he wants to respond.
Okay. Let's do that. Okay, what's his number?
617.
617.
53. 0038.
Okay, I missed the number after 3.
Okay, 617-953-0053.
Oh, 953. Okay, wait a minute. Okay, that was the problem. I missed the 9. 953-0038. Ralph?
Yes. 0038? 0038.
Okay, I'm calling him now.
Okay. Well, that is interesting.
Yo. To say the least.
Yeah, he's pretty animated about it all.
Yeah, he's, I think he could use a little of our input here. Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, Gigi.
Yeah.
Gigi, this is Tom Hayes. I got Ralph Peace on the line. Ralph, say something.
Gigi?
Go ahead, Ralph. Ralph! Ralph!
Gigi.
Ralph! Say
yes.
Something to Gigi.
Hello.
Gigi, can you hear that?
No, I can't hear him. I can hear you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Try it again, yeah. Ralph.
Gigi, what's happening?
Yeah, he's real distant. I can barely hear him.
You can barely
okay,
hear
Gigi. Gigi, why don't you do this? Why don't I'm Tom Hayes. I got this. We're on the air. We're doing this radio show about the Sugar Shack, and we just want to get some input from you about, you know, your experiences, your times at the Sugar Shack.
Okay. The Sugar Shack back in the day. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you, Gigi.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
The Sugar Shack back in the day was a place for gentlemen of leisure. And when I say gentlemen of leisure, the biggest pimps in the country would come through. They would come through from, I'd say, from about Ohio on, and would, use it as a designation point. It was like a central point for them to congregate and to get off whatever they wanted to. Which we all know what they were into.
Oh yeah, and there were some beautiful species in that place.
Right, and they would what would happen? The they would play like music, and then they would bring the it would be like a hiatus, and then the pimps would all march in, and they would send their girls in first. And then they would come strutting in afterward with their canes, fur coats, fur hats, whatever they were wearing at that particular time, whatever was ostentatious at that particular time, you know what I mean? Because they dressed to impress.
Dressed to impress. Yes, they did. Go ahead. Keep talking, Gigi. This is great.
And Rudy Cabrino, who was the a manager owner at that particular time, he had another place down in Fort Lauderdale. I believe he owned the Rhinoceros downtown, too, with about two clubs. So Rudy was representing like organized crime at the time, but they owned the place.
Yep.
Ask him about.
And a lot of the pimps, I mean, they would have bowls of cocaine and whatnot up in the back part of the club, and they'd be, snorting coke, doing what they had to do, man, you know, because that was their thing back in the day, you know. They got high, and a lot of entertainers got high, you know, marijuana and cocaine. That was a big thing down there. Now, this is kind of like a undercover kind of a thing, because a lot of people didn't really realize or know what was really going on in the club. You know what I mean? They weren't privy to what I'm talking to. You know what I mean? They didn't have any ideas of what was really happening, you know, in the club at that particular time.
Well, you know, Gigi, I have to beg to differ, because if you went into the men's room, remember... There was only one stall. You remember that?
Yeah.
And in that stall, at any time during the day, there would be about 10, one stall with about 10 feet that you could see in the stall. So there'd be 10, there'd be five guys in there.
All right.
If you do the math, 10 feet, five guys, and there would be a cloud of smoke pouring out of the thing, like they were grilling grilling ribs.
But the biggest acts in the country at that time was crazy. I think the only ones that didn't play the Sugar Set was Diana Ross, was about the only one, and the Jackson 5. I think they were the only groups that didn't come to the Sugar Set.
Well, the Temps.
I saw everybody else down there.
Yeah, the Temps. Eddie Kendricks came in there, but not the Temps. The Temps didn't come in.
Right.
But Eddie Kendricks was there, and
I
remember.
I saw him down there more than once.
Yeah. You know, but that you're right. There was everybody else: the OJs, the Impressions, Harold Melvin, Curtis Mayfield. I just found out. I'm so furious. I saw a picture. Rudy Guarino actually has a Facebook page, so you might want to check that out. Yeah, and he's we're gonna get him on this radio show soon. But I was shocked. He's standing there with the picture of Jackie Wilson. If there was anybody I would have loved to have seen, it would have been Jackie Wilson.
Right.
You know.
But all the groups, and even us. I mean, you know, like whoever you were, you would look forward to going down there on Thursday night, you know, dressing up and going down and listening to the music. It was a big thing back then, you know, at that particular time. It was a place to be.
Well, you're right. Every Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I mean, those groups were so good, you'd have to hear them over and over again.
Right.
Yeah.
You know. Go ahead, Ralph.
Gigi. Can you give a little shout out to Paul Kennedy? I know you know him very well.
I can't barely hear you.
He said, "Give a shout out." He said, "Give a shout out to Paul Kennedy." Is that it?
Kennedy. Yeah, he did a lot of choreography for a lot of the big name groups at that particular time. Mildred Kennedy was his mother. She was a dance aficionado. She had dancing schools and stuff, and Paul kind of took over for her. And he did a lot of choreography. Went to New York, went to different places, worked with the Temptations, worked with a lot of the different groups, the Epics, the Ambitions, a bunch of groups that Paul Kennedy worked with. Moved to California, and I think Paul. Had a heart attack, I believe, about 20 years ago, 25 years ago.
Hey, Ralph, how do you know this Paul Kennedy? Ralph?
Huh?
How do you know this Paul Kennedy? What's your memories of Paul Kennedy?
He was the Boston people around here. Very famous. There was involved in a lot of the entertainers and various and sundry people.
Brother was Wilbur Kennedy, who was Captain America. He had all his girls dress up in the colors of the American flag when he was working here and working in New York. And he also had a monkey that he had on his shoulder, and the monkey's name was Stags, called Stags. that was Paul's brother Wilbur. Wilbur was a big time mob back in the day.
The pimps have kind of lost their stature in these days of the internet. I guess they really don't need them anymore.
But you know what?